Jamie Locker with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Thunderstorms popping up here, there, and everywhere around Saskatchewan to keep us up to date. East of Kindersley, or west of Kindersley, east of Kindersley as well. Some thunderstorms there. This extreme southeast of Alberta. That system is kind of moving into Saskatchewan. Near Medicine Hat right now is under a big time tornado warning. So that's kind of the weather they're getting to.
Stay away,
the west.
Hail.
And yes, Belton Johnson would like that very much. They've upgraded a severe thunderstorm warning to orange in central Saskatchewan. Again, that is east of Kindersley, more over through the Rosetown, east of Rosetown, Loreburn, Elbow areas with some thunderstorms this afternoon. Bring us up to date if you see anything we should be passing along. But right now, we're going to get you up to speed on the Calgary Stampeders, the opponent for the Rough Riders on Saturday night at McMahon Stadium in Calgary, with the Riders at 1-0 and a heartbreaking loss for the Stamps in week one. But they're coming off a bye week. Mark Steven joining us once again, the voice of the Calgary Stampeders on QR770. Mark, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, and you mentioned that system, the Stampeders, after actually left the field a couple minutes early, because even here there was just such a powerful wind that just about blew them off the field, so they decided to walk off. So it must be quite a storm here.
Yeah, it's making its way through the prairies, as we know, this time of year. Mark, when you look at right now, I'm going to bring this up because I know it's only 2 weeks of the CFL season, and it's way too premature to say anything, but I don't know what Stampeder fans are saying. But in Saskatchewan, a lot of people are asking, why are we changing the rules? Like, the first 2 weeks have been phenomenal football, and going, what's wrong with this league? Like, hasn't the start of this season been one of the better ones in recent memory?
It sure has, and it just carries on the trend from the playoffs of last year. I mean, the playoff game, let's just look in the West. BC and the Stamps, it was an amazing game. BC won in the last minute. You'll all recall the Riders and the Lions, then the Grey Cup, and the Eastern games were great. And I'm with you totally. These first 2 weeks have just been amazing. So I would love to see all these stats that says the game is going to be way different, way better, because I'm having a hard time understanding how it could be better. You know, it can be different. I'm not completely, you know, opposed to changes, but I'm with you totally. I think it's just been a fabulous start to the season.
You know what we're starting to see now is we're starting to see more, more sort of pushback from fans on the rules, right? People have had a chance to sit and stew on it, Mark, and now people have, like, they put their thoughts together, and they're writing letters to the editor. They're calling with
well, our post game show, we had a few callers going, why are we changing the rules?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But you're getting more articulation from the fans. Are you seeing that on your end, Mark, as well?
Yes, I am, and I've had some people that I consider, you know, fairly knowledgeable and up to date on the CFL, and they told me there's a lot of internal pushback on the 110-yard field disappearing. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that they're going to change it, but I'll tell you what, it's not being completely well received. Some of the other rules you can kind of say maybe okay, but the 110-yard is getting pushback on a whole bunch of levels. You know, is it going to go through? Probably, but I'm not going to guarantee it because, as I say, I just heard some internal pushback.
Well, I hope they get it done because they're putting in new turf next year for the Grey Cup in Mosaic Stadium.
Well, there is a chance they're going to back out of some of these rule changes, they better start doing it now, because you can't get these teams moving forward and spending the money to make the alterations and then go,
never mind,
we're just kidding.
Sorry.
Well, what about the teams that share with U-Sport teams such as Calgary, such as Regina? I mean, what do they do about different goalposts, different fields? And, I don't think it was thoroughly well thought out, a lot of it, but especially the 110-yard field.
Well, let's dig into week one for the Calgary Stampeders, as I mentioned, right down to the wire against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Then they go on a bye week. Mark, what should we expect from the Calgary Stampeders in week three in a clash against their Rider rivals?
Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, I mean, it's just an odd schedule because of the World Cup and all these very short weeks and abbreviated weeks. I think the Stampeders did a lot of things well, but obviously not enough. They got back on the field today, and Flo Ormelad and Jalen Hutchings both took part in the workout. They're going to work with them and talk today, probably have, with the medical team. They want to be assured that the two of them can be on the field for at least 50 snaps. So, you know, they're coming off of injuries. They want to make sure that once they put them on there, that they can stay on there because, you know, with the limited rosters, you don't want to lose a couple of roster spots early in the game. But if they play, that'll make a difference because I thought Trevor Harris, he played very, very well, but he also had a lot of time to pick out those targets. So that'll be one thing the Stampeders will have to do. And then, you know, just get back on track and build on some of the good things they did against Winnipeg.
It might not be fair to ask this question, Mark, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. And you can tell me that that you're not ready to make a comparison. But are you seeing any improvements or changes in Vernon Adams Jr.'s game right now from where we were last year with him? And he had a great year last year.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, he was playing his best football towards the end of the year last year, and I think he played quite well in the opener against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The Stampeders didn't have a turnover. They did have a real lull in the third quarter, and that probably decided the game as much as anything. But outside of that, you know, they had 27 first downs and moved the ball, and running back Dedrick Mills was very strong. So I think they played quite well, and I think he had a very good game. Frankly, I think the quarterback play everywhere in the league so far has just been amazing. And, you know, he's certainly part of that conversation.
Yeah, everybody's clutching along early.
It's that parody. Parody comes up almost like every day on the Green Zone, especially when we're talking about the West.
Yeah. Well, even Chad Kelly looked good. Davis Alexander's having a great start. Bo Levi Mitchell out East.
He's clicking.
We're still just, we'll wait to see what Jake Mayer comes out, not playing in a rainstorm this week. When they take on Toronto Argonauts. But, Mark, of course, last year much is talked about, especially with the Stamps fans that I know, that, hey, the Stamps never lost to the Riders last year. But how much is Dedrick Mills an X factor for this Stampeder team to try to keep Trevor Harris on the sideline and control the game?
Oh, for sure. He'll be a big part of it. He particularly in the first half against Winnipeg, was really strong and good in the second half. He ended up with 112 yards. He certainly is a workhorse, and I think he's a guy that's going to be very important for the exact reason you mentioned. Just continue to extend drives. And Stampeders actually had a 15-play drive in that Winnipeg game, and I don't know how often that pops up, but not very in the CFL. So he is important to making sure that they win the time of possession battle, and by extension, a good shot at winning the game.
Mark, how are fans responding to the new red and white uniforms? I didn't hate them. I thought they did a good job of maybe updating a old look. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think the road uniforms, actually, from people I've spoken to and those that have seen them, actually, they're better than the home red uniforms, but there's nothing really wrong with the home red uniforms. I think they're both pretty good. I think it was a nice touch to upgrade them. Looking forward to seeing the white ones on the road. But overall, I think they did a very good job in upgrading and getting ready the striped shoulders there. I had a little hard time with that. But now they've got these uniforms, and I think they'll go over very well.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, I feel for you whenever the BC Lions come to Calgary on their road jerseys.
Yeah, I saw those. Yeah.
They're awful.
My goodness.
I don't like them.
In the building on Saturday, I'm going, I feel for Mark Stephen and play-by-play guys trying to figure out which BC Lions getting the ball with those gray silver numbers on white uniforms.
Yeah, just like they had those black on black ones last year. So they specialize in hard to read uniforms, don't they? So
would a team ever come to the broadcast crew and go, "Hey, what do you guys think?" Or no? Like, you guys are completely ignored, aren't you, Mark?
I'd say the next one that does is the first one. So I'll wait for the hell, but I'll certainly welcome it. They'll be welcome to tell me. I actually wrote the league and said, look, you know what? It's one thing for the broadcasters, but, you know, the fans in the stands. And how about the coaches? I mean, they dive into the video of every single team the minute the game is over, because if that's your next opponent, you know, Saskatchewan's next opponent, they'll be diving into the Stampeder video. It just is. It's got to be really hard on them, but I guess it's there to sell some jerseys, and they're doing it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Mark Steven, voice of the Calgary Stampeders, UR770, as the Riders take on the Stamps. Overall, when you look at Calgary this season, I'm wondering about that receiving core because they've dealt with injuries, they've dealt with retirements. What do we really make of week one on what you saw from a little bit of a rejigged receiving core around Vernon Adams Jr., outside, of course, of Philpott?
Yeah, outside of Philpott, yeah, I've just got to mention him. He was really, really good, and he's blossoming. He's got to catch his brother, but they're both very effective players, that's for sure. I think they were good, but not great. They're missing Clark Barnes, a starter. I think he's going to play this week. He's a very talented player. But the real linchpin is Reggie Begelton, who, the Riders have a Mr. Second Down receiver in Schaefer Baker. He does that for this club as well. So he's a little bit behind. I'm not sure when he's going to get on the field. So I think it's a good group now, but I think there's room for them to improve and grow. And, maybe somebody else will emerge. Eric Brooks is a speedy little guy that I hope he can pick up. And Deshaun Brissett, again, was good but not great in game one. That's the only free agent they really signed from Toronto. So we'll see how this works. And I think they've got more from the receiving corps for sure.
Well, Mark, it should be a dandy if the first 2 weeks are any indication on Saturday night at McMahon Stadium. Enjoy it. And thanks for your time this afternoon.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much. Yeah, looking forward to another great game and a string of great ones the league's had so far. Thanks for calling.
That is Mark Steven, the voice of the Calgary Stampeders on QR770 in Calgary. It's the Stamps and the Riders. This Saturday, 5 o'clock is the kickoff. Of course, the Green Zone pregame show hits the air at 3. And we'll keep you up to date on the injured list, by the way, for the Rough Riders. A few more added to the practice report with Jermarcus Hardrick not participating in practice, and the long snapper Aaron Crawford, which could be a bit of a concern with Jorgen Hughes's retirement from last year. More coming up here on the Green Zone. We'll get back to our debate today on the Mount Rushmore of Hockey Night in Canada personalities and somebody who helped produce Hockey Night in Canada, John Shannon, on stories of the 80s around Hockey Night in Canada. Maybe was that its strongest era when they brought in Ron and Don? This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. The Rough Riders official injury report from practice. Jermarcus Hardrick did not participate. Jaden Dahlke also did not participate. Nelson Lacombo, Roland Milligan Jr. Also not participating. Aaron Crawford, the long snapper, didn't participate. So that
could be
interesting.
What are the rules revolving around the release of that? Because
they have to.
They have to. Before the practice?
No, after.
After, okay.
There's a deadline that they have to have their injury report submitted to the league by.
Daily?
Daily.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Whenever they're on the field, they have to put an injured list, and it has to be as accurate as possible.
They just got to name the injury type, though, right? Like neck, knee.
Knee, hand, knee. Yep. And did not participate, limited or full participant. And by the way, healthy scratch, load management, no longer a thing. That was on injury reports. You're not allowed to put that down.
Okay.
You have two reserve players now.
Interesting.
And if some people, the Riders were doing
that's going to change roster management, no?
Yeah, there's three or four guys they were putting on load management. It was like, no. If they're healthy, they need to be on the active roster. So now they have two designated reserve roster spots. That's where Braden Shager is, which is a little bit of a change from last year. Time now for the Green Zone 1 minute drill, the latest in sports. John Tortorella is out as Vegas Golden Knights head coach. There for a short time. And it was a pretty good time. He did pretty well with the Vegas Golden Knights, taking to the Stanley Cup. But They'll move on from Torts. Trade in the NHL, the Leafs traded Joseph Woll, defenseman Simone Benoit to Philadelphia. They get a defenseman Emile Andre and a goalie Samuel Ersson and a third-round pick in return. And John Chyka does say they're close to hiring a new head coach. Coming up next, to remember Hockey Night in Canada as they put an end to it on CBC. John Shannon, a former producer and host of 100% Hockey, the podcast, next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
It's up in your game. Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me jump in your game. She's walking down the street, blind to where it's...
Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone on this Tuesday. Looks like a stormy day on the western side of the province. Severe thunderstorm watches for much of western Saskatchewan and warnings in some areas. Of course, we'll bring you up to speed on the weather throughout the afternoon on your drive home as we continue with the news today that came out in a joint news conference from Sportsnet and CBC. And they said Hockey Night in Canada on CBC is done. Sportsnet will be the exclusive home of hockey on Saturday nights moving forward. And as a lot of people reminiscing about the decades and decades of the tradition of CBC and Hockey Night in Canada. And someone who got to produce Hockey Night in Canada on CBC is friend of the Green Zone, John Shannon, who joins us today. John, thanks for doing this today, by the way, on short notice.
Happy to do it, boys.
By the way, I tell a lot of people that you and I are friends now, John.
You know, Locker, you know, there are some stories that will just live in perpetuity. That might be one of them.
So, John, what's your reaction? Everybody in the business kind of knew this was probably eventually the way it was going, but to no longer be able to turn on Hockey Night in Canada on CBC will feel a little bit weird fall.
I think you're right. And I don't think we understand some of the ramifications of the decision. You know, the CBC's in a lot more homes in this country than Sportsnet and City TV are in this country. Perhaps between 3 and 4 million homes different. So there will be parts of the country that, if they elect not to have cable TV or don't have cable TV or access to satellite or cable television, will not get Saturday hockey. And, you know, that's lots of people in the Maritimes, lots of people in the North. So it's going to be interesting that with today's news release is when the season starts late September this year, how many people will pay attention then?
John, we've sort of talked about this on and off for the last couple of years here on the Green Zone about the CBC and the Don and the Ron thing comes up. And without getting into sort of the nuances of that relationship and what side of the fence you fall on, without getting into it, do you think that... What's the best way? Do you think that it was handled properly with what happened to Don? And do you think there should have been something done after the fact to maybe honor Don, regardless of whether or not he was right or wrong?
I mean, how long do we have?
Yeah.
You know, that's a really difficult question to answer because the three of us weren't in any of those meetings. We weren't in the session at Don's house when they asked him to apologize. You know that. So it's a difficult one. That's a difficult one to comprehend and discuss without knowing all of the facts. And quite frankly, I think there are probably three people in the world that know. Maybe four that know all of the facts, and so that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was Don treated fairly? you know, some would say, yeah, he was treated fairly. He was. They told him he could come back on the air if he had apologized, and he refused to apologize. So at least that's how I understand it.
Mm-hmm. John, we have the listeners on this news because it is such a, you know, it's iconic. Hockey Night in Canada is such an icon. We grew up watching it. Yeah. That's how I fell in love with sports broadcasting, is watching Ron and Don and, you know, the satellite hot stove and the journalists who would come on, whether it be Eric DeHatchek or Al Strachan or those guys going, oh, man, I'm not a very good hockey player, but I could see myself doing that. So we were talking about Mount Rushmore of characters on Hockey Night in Canada, and that means four, and there's so many you could put on there. But what would you add to the conversation? Because a lot of Howie Meekers and Dick Irvins and Foster Hewitts and Don Cherry and, well, currently Ron's kind of fallen out of favor amongst some Saskatchewanians, but Ron McLean can be on there too, and Bob Cole and Harry Neal.
Ron's on mine.
What would you say from what you remember a Hockey Night in Canada on who are the mainstays should be on a Mount Rushmore?
Well, I'm going to go a little off script. Because it's difficult to pick just four. But I do think that you'd have to pick Don. I do think you'd have to pick Foster. I would pick, Bob Cole next. And then I'd pick the guy that really modernized the show. I would pick the guy that made the Hockey Night that you guys fell in love with, the show of record. And that was a guy named Ralph Mellenby. And Ralph, to me, put more of an imprint on the program than anyone else in the history of the program, whether they were a commentator or not. And he was the executive producer from 1968 to 1984. He was my first boss. And he was as prolific and big a name in sports television in our country that has ever been created.
John, is Ron in trouble?
For the comment the other night?
Yeah. Is it over?
No. I have not heard anything official. I thought he handled the apology fine. He was trying to be cute, and it caught him. I don't think Ron would be in trouble for that. No, I really don't.
Okay.
Do you remember your first game you produced, John, and what that was like?
Well, I can't use the real word that I was feeling because I was really scared. So yes, it would have been, I think November of 1978, Vancouver Canucks, Quebec Nordiques at the Coliseum in Vancouver. And then, I just put my head down and started working and did not only Saturday games, but did games Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays every week. So that was my first, and my really the first thing of note and that I everybody asks about and I talk about more than anything is my first Stanley Cup final, and the game six of the Islanders Flyers and Bob Nystrom's overtime winning goal. And it just so happened that the play-by-play guy that night was Jim Robson, and growing up in the interior of BC, my idol as a child was Jim Robson, so that was kind of cool.
We were reminiscing about just the iconic franchise that Hockey Night in Canada. Like, what other program had people petitioning when there's the song changed and when George Strombolopoulos was the host and they wanted Ron back? That is what this show has meant for Canadians, right? John, else would have people fired up outside of maybe politics?
It's part of our DNA.
Yeah.
We love the game of hockey. Saturday nights became a tradition of what and almost a family time of watching a hockey game. And you know, quite frankly, it, you know, with everything, you know, we're going through a really patriotic time in our country right now with everything that's gone on with President Trump and the tariffs and the world and that we live in now. And, you know, very, very few times do we have something that is so iconically Canadian that it's ours. You know, it didn't start at the BBC and is now a spin-off in Canada. It isn't from Fox or ABC, CBS or NBC. It is ours. And that's what Hockey Night in Canada was for 74 years on television. 74. And that's what made it so special, the continuity of it. The guys that you talked about, the guys that are on Mount Rushmore that you mentioned. That's Canadiana. That's what our country's built on. And quite frankly, that's what the CBC did so well for so many years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For so many years. And so that put a great deal of pride online for a great many of us. So it's a sad day today. It's a real day. It exists. It's going to change. There's still going to be hockey on Saturday nights. You know that.
Oh, yeah. But
and it's going to be on Sportsnet, and it's going to be on City TV. They'll have a new piece of music, and they'll have, you know, new animations that go, you know, NHL on Rogers. But it won't be called Hockey Night in Canada anymore.
I get the sense that I can ask you this question because I feel like even the people that you had trouble with, that you worked with, you're probably still friends with. Is there somebody that stands out head and shoulders above everybody else that caused you more headaches than anyone else in your time producing Hockey Night in Canada?
Please say Drew.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was the one who convinced. I had left Hockey Night before Drew got hired, but when I convinced Drew to take the job because I believed Drew would be great for Hockey Night. Now it didn't work out the way I wanted it to for him, and I'm glad he's back doing what he loves doing with the Sharks. But Drew's that part. No, you know what? It was never that way. I'll be honest, it was never that way, because once we got to a Saturday, and so when you got to a Saturday, you were usually together for half of Friday. So once you got to the arena, or you got to the city, you were all on the same page. You were all on the same page, believing what those four simple words meant, and that you had an obligation to be the best you could be and tell stories the way that they needed to be told, and entertain and have fun with people at home. I really, you know, there wasn't this angst that went around. And again, the guy who taught me that was Mellenby on how to do it and what to do right and keep going on and on. And the one thing I would say is that, you know, for the longest time, there was a Hockey Night way of doing things. There was a raison d'etre about what Hockey Night stood for and what it was supposed to be. And whether that was the type of close-ups, the type of commentary, the features, everything that was intrinsic to the show, whether it was Coach's Corner or, in my time, the Satellite Hot Stove, or Scoreboard Saturday, or the original After Hours. Those were things that were given a great deal of tender, loving care. And we spent hours working on to make sure they were the right thing for that weekend or that show, so Canadians could enjoy it.
Well, John, the end of an era for sure, but as you said, hockey will still be there on Saturdays. It'll just be a little bit different. John, yep. Thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thanks, buddy.
Cheers, boys. Locker, just the next round's on you. That's all I know.
All right.
That is John
I'll
Shannon.
Pick up a tab.
100% Hockey Podcast is where you can check out his work, and a former producer of Hockey Night in Canada. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Our game of the night, it's going to be Argentina-Algeria. Lionel Messi and the defending World Cup champions begin their tournament tonight at 7 o'clock Saskatchewan time. Meanwhile, it was Kylian Mbappe scoring twice in a 3-1 win for the runners-up from 2022 France. And Norway won Iraq 1 right now, just about to begin. The second half. Canada, of course, resumes their World Cup tournament on Thursday in Vancouver against Qatar. A trade in the NHL, Joseph Woll, the Maple Leafs, ship him to Philadelphia. They get a defenseman, a goalie, and a third-round pick in return. And John Tortorella was told,
see ya.
Yeah, hope you can get back to Carolina to get your clothes, but you're not going to be the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights anymore. And so that'll be that after a pretty successful run for John Tortorella. He was 28-1 as coach with the Vegas Golden Knights.
That's kind of insane, right?
It is. Coming up next, you heard John Shannon talk about Hockey Night in Canada and some of the great personalities. And now we're going back to you. Who would be on your Mount Rushmore of those who were the faces and the voices of Hockey Night in Canada? Next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.